Welcome back, everyone. The time is 10:37, and we are reconvening for the City Planning Commission regular meeting. We will now take up item number 7, case number CPC 2019-4000, GPA-ZCHD-CPIOA. The environmental case number is ENV 2008-1780, EIR ADD 1, and ENV 2008-1781, EIR ADD 1. This project involves proposed amendments to the existing South LA, Southeast LA, and the West Adams, Baldwin Hills, Leimert CPIOs within Council Districts 8 and 9. A CPIO is a Community Plan Implementation Overlay District. Commissioners, please note that a technical modification was submitted for item number 7. It was emailed to all commissioners. Cecilia, are there any day of submissions?
Cecilia Lamas, for the record, while we do not have any day of submission for item number 7, I just like to inform members of the public that the technical modification can be viewed in the shared drive by clicking on the link located at the top of the first page of the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, we will hear from planning staff. Planning staff, please go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you, President Millman. While I screen share, I set up my screen share, we will need about 20 minutes.
You are untimed. You take as much time as you need to present this to both commissioners and to the public. Thank you.
Perfect. Is my presentation showing?
It is beautifully. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Stephen Kadikbak, city planner, and I'm joined by my colleagues today, city planning associate Andrew Pasillas, as well as city senior city planner Ruben Caldwell and principal city planner Heidi Urita Lopez. So today we'll be presenting on the Slauson Corridor Transit Neighborhood Plan, or TNP for short. This has been a multi-year long-range land use planning effort centered around Slauson Avenue in anticipation of LA Metro's future active transportation corridor, bike and pedestrian path. Starting with some background, Slauson Avenue runs roughly 6 miles east-west through the city of LA. It's historically been the center of a lot of industrial activity, and today is a major corridor for jobs. LA Metro, they acquired the abandoned rail right-of-way on Slauson and have plans to replace the railroad tracks with a bike and pedestrian path. Metro's name for this project, for that project, is the rail-to-rail active transportation corridor. The bike path will also include street trees, landscaping, lighting, and security features. Metro's construction of the bike path broke ground in July 2022, and Metro anticipates completing the project by 2024. In 2018, LA City Planning was awarded a TOD planning grant by Metro to do land use planning around their future active transportation corridor, but also around the three Metro station areas that intersect the bike path. This land use effort is what the Department of City Planning has branded the Slauson Corridor Transit Neighborhood Plan. The timing of the TNP work program generally aligns with the timing of Metro's bike path, with the TNP aiming to become effective in the second half of 2023. The TNP has three overarching goals. The first is to foster building designs that will complement and help activate the future bike path. Secondly, the TNP aims to preserve the jobs-rich nature of the industrial corridor and to focus on greener and cleaner jobs that are consistent with the mayor's Green New Deal and plan for a healthy Los Angeles. And thirdly, since the bike path intersects three major transit lines, the A line, the J line, and the newly opened K line, the TNP aims to balance the need for green jobs and housing opportunities, especially affordable housing. TNP project area shown here in orange generally spans the alignment of the active transportation corridor, which is shown in green, which overall stretches across the three South community plan areas. For context, the TNP is a work program that follows in the footsteps of the three South Community Plan updates that were adopted by City Council in 2016 and 2017. And the GNP work program itself serves as an implementation program of those community plans. The GNP's proposed changes will affect the three South community plans and their accompanying community plan implementation overlays, or CPIOs for short. For the West Adams Baldwin Hills Lemert CPIO, the TNP includes new design standards for the existing Hyde Park Industrial Corridor, CPIO subarea. For the South and Southeast LA community plans, the TNP involves zone changes and general plan amendments, and also the creation of a new CPIO chapter for the proposed Slauson subareas that tailor the provisions and incentives for the TNP area. The TNP will also add new implementation programs for the three community plan policy documents. And with that, I will hand it over to my colleague, Andrew Pisius.
Thank you, Stephen, and good morning, commissioners. Again, my name is Andrew Pisius, and I'll be guiding you through the proposed plan and key issues. So as mentioned, the proposed plan would result in new Slauson sub-areas identified in a new chapter in the South and Southeast Los Angeles CPIOs. Existing CPIO sub-areas within the TNP project area that were established in the original CPIOs would now be transitioned into the new Slauson sub-areas CPIO chapter. In the West Adams, Baldwin Hills, Lemert CPIO, no new sub-areas are proposed. Among the key issues identified through outreach that informed the proposed plan were concerns about industrial and residential conflicts and a desire to see cleaner future industrial uses, a need for additional affordable housing opportunities, a desire to connect the community to the future active transportation corridor, and lastly, a continuing strategy to direct growth to commercial corridors and transit-rich centers. Incentivizing green employment uses. To encourage green employment uses, the proposed plan includes a new CPIO incentive for bonus floor area. Examples of green employment uses could include professional or creative offices, research and development centers or incubators, and research laboratories. The proposed plan would also allow the Director of Planning to deem reasonably similar uses as a qualifying green employment use. To address concerns about incompatible uses, the proposed plan would include a half-mile limitation on new pallet storage uses. And finally, the proposed plan also aims to promote more sustainable transportation technologies by proposing that parking spaces provided above what is required by the LAMC would need to be electric vehicle charging ready. The SL and SK1 subareas are found in the Goodyear Tract and Slauson Western Hub, where the majority of industrial zoning is not proposed to change. We heard from stakeholders about the need to protect these viable industrial districts from encroachment of non-industrial uses in order to maintain a strong local employment base. The SK2 subarea is applied to several pockets of industrial uses along Slauson, where the majority of industrial zoning is also not proposed to change. The zoning here would be restricted to allow only the lightest of industrial and commercial uses. The Green Employment Use Incentive offers bonus FAR if a new project includes a green employment use and records a covenant to keep that use in place for at least 30 years. The SL and SK1 subareas are found in established employment hubs that can support larger buildings for green employment uses. So here the proposed plan offers a bonus of up to 3 FAR. In the SK2 subarea, the proposed plan offers a bonus of up to 2.5 FAR. A slightly smaller bonus compared to the hubs, but on the other hand would help address concerns heard about scale and transitions between industrial and adjacent residential uses. The proposed plan also includes a 25% parking reduction for qualified green employment uses. Expanding affordable housing opportunities. To address concerns about affordable housing, the proposed plan would expand the existing CPIO affordable housing incentive system to encourage mixed-use and mixed-income projects that help connect housing opportunities to transit and the bike path. This includes expanding the incentive program into the hybrid CPIO subareas with a commercial manufacturing zone. New development would qualify for the incentive program only if it is a CPIO affordable housing project, which is a 100% affordable housing project or a mixed income project that sets aside affordable units. And the set-asides for this incentive program are equivalent to TOC Tier 4 set-asides. The SN1 and SN2 subareas would concentrate and allow future mixed income and affordable housing near the active transportation corridor, with the SN2 subarea providing a particular context-sensitive approach by setting a low base density. This would limit new development to the scale of the existing low-density housing on the ground today if affordable units are not set aside. The SJ subarea allows for a mix of uses, including light industrial and commercial, as well as live, work, and residential. And finally, the SI subarea retains a focus on jobs by limiting the amount of residential uses on a site up to 50% of a building floor area. This is an increase from the 30% limitation in the existing CPIOs. Based on community feedback, the proposed plan has an exemption from the 50% residential limitation for CPIO 100% affordable housing projects and permanent supportive housing. The proposed plan offers new development in the SI, SJ, SN1, and SN2 subareas a range of incentives through the CPIO incentive program. With this incentive-based strategy, the density, height, and FAR increases, and the parking reduction incentive would help encourage mixed-income housing in exchange for setting aside affordable units. The benefit of the CPIO's incentive system is that it involves an administrative approval process, which would help streamline projects. Activating the bike path. The proposed plan includes a new set of path-abutting design standards to ensure that new construction projects are oriented towards the active transportation corridor. It is envisioned that the standards will create a more pleasant experience for users of the active transportation corridor and help facilitate access. The standards would apply to sites along the bike path identified in a pink outline and apply only to new construction projects. The proposed standards include a minimum setback, a path-facing building entrance, ground floor transparency standard, and mural guidance. The standards aim to address concerns we heard about how future new development could complement and open up towards a bike path so that path-abutting spaces are activated and safe for both bike path users and building occupants. We also want to encourage new projects to consult with Metro to potentially create additional access points along the active transportation corridor wherever it is feasible. And to help incentivize access, city planning worked with LADOT to establish the provision of path access from private property as an eligible strategy as part of the TDM ordinance update. In the West Adams Baldwin Hills Lemert CPIO, the proposed plan would continue to further the community plan's vision for a clean tech and green tech corridor that promotes publicly accessible open space. In this area, similar path abutting design standards are proposed. For setbacks, a project in this area may be eligible for bonuses such as FAR if it is located near the K-line, qualifies and records a covenant as a green employment use, and records a covenant to maintain the setback area abutting the active transportation corridor as publicly accessible. Areas shown in teal are subject to a 10-foot setback, while areas in pink are subject to a 20-foot setback. And you'll notice that just before Crenshaw Boulevard, the future active transportation corridor detours off of the existing rail right-of-way and becomes a mixed traffic bike route and bike lane on local streets. Currently, it is not feasible for Metro to continue the bike path down the rail right-of-way because of the K-line alignment as it daylights from under Crenshaw Boulevard. To address this disconnect in the bike path, the intent for the larger 20-foot setback for project sites west of Crenshaw Boulevard is to provide the right-of-way conditions for the bike path to one day directly connect to the K-Line Fairview Heights station. continued vision for corridors and TOD subareas. The proposed plan would carry over the vision for the existing corridors and TOD subareas and expand the application of the TOD high subarea in order to direct growth to commercial corridors and transit-rich centers along Fossen. The new path abiding design standards would also apply to new construction projects adjacent to the bike path for these subareas. The SC subarea allows for a broad range of commercial uses and requires commercial uses for new development at the ground floor. The SF and SG subareas have existing development incentives for FAR, height and density, that are offered in exchange for the inclusion of community benefits, such as publicly accessible open space and targeted commercial uses. For example, full-service grocery stores, sit-down restaurants, childcare centers, and health clubs. And with that, I'll turn the presentation back over to Stephen. Thank you.
Stephen Kenick back, City Planner for the record. Thanks, Andy. So following the public hearing, planning staff considered additional comments and further revisions to the proposed plan. Council District 9 requested some changes to CPIO subareas to further enhance the mixed-use vision for the corridor, as well as increase residential density near employment centers such as the Goodyear Track. These requests overall fit the vision of the TNP and have been incorporated in the proposed plan. Staff also submitted a technical modification to the staff report to correctly reflect the change of the CPIO subarea grouping of Hybrid Industrial 2 to Slauson Multifamily 1, which is otherwise correctly reflected in other exhibits and in the staff report narrative. This change in part just involves revising the proposed land use to medium residential and the zone to R3. South Los Angeles Industrial Track slate bid for the Goodyear Track also submitted a comment letter and expressed concerns with the TNP's draft plan. The TNP agreed with the bid's request to eliminate an initial proposal to allow two standalone restaurants per block base, as it was determined that standalone restaurants were deemed inappropriate for the industrial area. On the other hand, after consideration, the TNP will proceed with the proposed 25% parking reduction incentive for green employment uses as a way to attract said uses, and the TNP will proceed with keeping the CPIO's existing prohibition on new noxious uses, which is in line with the goal, with the TNP's goal of promoting greener industry. Planning staff also conducted initial analyses on the bonus densities that were offered in the TNP's draft plan. So as a result, staff modified the proposed plan to include increases to bonus densities for the following CPIO subareas, SI, SJ, and SN2, to help make the CPIO affordable housing incentive system more competitive with other citywide incentive programs. Merv outreach. So staff conducted a multi-year effort that included a variety of outreach strategies. After the TNP was launched in September 2018, staff held in-person kickoff events in 2019 at local venues. We also tabled at numerous community events. Then in the spring of 2020, staff hosted a virtual concepts webinar, which was followed up by virtual office hours. In 2021, we partnered with the South LA Climate Commons Collaborative to help publish a report outlining strategies that aligned with the community's vision. And this past spring, we hosted another series of virtual office hours to solicit input on the draft plan. Staff also, throughout this process, produced outreach materials in both English and Spanish, which included outreach summaries after milestone outreach events and an interactive story map of the TNP area. As a result of our collaboration with the South LA Climate Commons, the TNP proposes adding new implementation program language to the three South community plans. These new implementation programs reflect new ideas and strategies that could be explored further in future planning or implementation efforts. Summary of recommended actions. So staff recommends the following actions for the TNP. Staff recommends the commission approve the staff report and recommend the council adopt the findings and find that no additional EIR or negative declaration is needed for approval of the GNP. Staff recommends the Commission approve and recommend that the Mayor and Council approve the related resolutions and zoning ordinances, and also instruct the Department to finalize any necessary maps for the Council. Staff also recommends the Commission find that the proposed CPIO amendments are consistent with the programs and policies of the South Community Plans. And lastly, authorize the Director of Planning to present the TNP to Council in accordance with the Charter and LAMC. So that concludes our presentation. Thank you, Commissioners, for the opportunity to present today on the Slauson Corridor Transit Neighborhood Plan.
Thank you to all five of you for your work on this. And we will probably have questions, so please stand by. At this time, are there any technical questions from commissioners? Seeing none, we will go ahead and open up the public testimony portion of this item. If you are participating by phone, please click on *9 and or press *9. If you are participating by Zoom, please click the raise hand button. If you're on the phone, Marcos will call out the last four digits of your phone number when it is your turn. Please press *6 to unmute yourself when you hear Marcos tell you that you are unmuted. If you're joining us by Zoom, you'll see a little dialog box pop up that says the host would like you to unmute. Please click on unmute at that time. We will give each speaker 2 minutes to speak. Thank you.
Marcos Godoy for the record. Caller Asata, you're unmuted.
Hey, good morning. Okay, my name is again Asata. I'm with the Hyde Park Organizational Partnership for Empowerment and also a member of the Park Mesa Heights Planning and Land Use Committee. And I'm speaking for myself. One of my primary issues of concern is regarding the green manufacturing. Some of the uses that were specified are not like clearly industrial. One of the things that we wanted to see was like perhaps like some solar implementation panels and stuff like that, so that there would actually be employment opportunities. I see you're talking about development centers and incubators. And I'm not sure exactly how that relates specifically to being able to have some type of industrial employment that actually provides some type of economic engine for the community. So that's a concern. And I'd like to see, you know, us do something in regards to that. Okay, the other thing is that in terms of the CPIO for the Hyde Park area there in Park Mesa Heights, is we want an opportunity to do some amendments, because one of our primary concerns was housing. And I noticed that in the South LA CPIO that there were amendments that actually allowed for more opportunities for affordable housing. So this is an issue that is a major concern, because along the Crenshaw corridor, we have been truly invaded upon with housing that is market rate and that most of the community cannot afford. So this is an issue that we want to make sure that we're able to address, and we would like to have, you know, been a part of those amendments that were made in the South LA plan. The other thing is, that would include the mixed income. But other than that, you know, this is something that we've been wanting to see, but we have major concerns in regards to making sure we have a true economic engine and that we have affordable housing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Caller George, you're unmuted.
Yeah, I don't have, I'm not going to speak too long, but my main concern is the industrial basis that is there, how we're going to keep it there, and how we're going to make sure that the presently industrial zone lots and land is not going to be eventually taken over by contractors and built as a housing, and we're going to lose that job producing element in this community. Okay.
Thank you.
Caller Mario, you're unmuted. Never mind, sorry. Caller Julie, you're unmuted. Julie, please go ahead and unmute yourself.
Hi, Julie Nadel. My husband and I own 6 properties in this area, and I'm very concerned. We have a property on 5860 Los Angeles Street that has been in escrow, and LADWP now is requesting that we pay $500,000 to put underground electrical wiring in when the city of LA owns across the street several acres, maybe like 8 acres. And we have been inundated by the homeless. They are not being restricted in parking. They have destroyed our property, 27,000 square feet destroyed. We also have a property on 1001 Fawson, 10001, that is being shut off now from the Fawson corridor. I have made 4 calls to staff Andrew Pacias. He has not called me back. I need to know a direction, because we're going to have to involve our attorney in this situation with both properties. And what are we to do when we're not even communicated with, like on Los Angeles Street, that it went from industrial to residential like 5 or 6 years ago? No one communicated that with us. It went to our tenant. And I am so upset about this. This was our retirement plan, and this is where we are. We're in a mess.
Thank you.
Caller Mario, you're unmuted.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. 2 things. My business is between McKinley and Central on the property that the previous caller was talking about, 1001 East Slauson. And I don't have entrance from Slauson because of the construction there. So we were advised to go through McKinley or Central, but there is no coordination within your project and the city parking enforcement, because there are a lot of cars parking over there. Last week, we have 2 people fighting because they couldn't get in or out. So that's one thing. The other thing is, from what I hear from the presenters, from the staff, the 16 business over there, do we need to close them down because for home projects? So I'd like to get an answer on that one also. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe that is the last member of the public. Cecilia, do we have neighborhood up? We have more. Please go ahead and call our speaker, Marcos.
Hello, Robbie, you are muted. Unfortunately, they're using an old version, so I'm going to have to promote them in order for them to speak.
Okay, thank you.
Robbie, please go ahead and unmute yourself and start your comment, please.
Thank you for promoting me. As soon as someone tells me how to get the newer version, I'll be so happy to do that. I sit on the board of the Park Mesa Heights Community Council. I am the Hyde Park rep. The problem is that when people say they've done outreach, that outreach consists of them presenting the plan that they've already made for us. The issue of affordable housing is critical and so disingenuous. When we hear affordable housing, we know that the exact opposite is getting ready to happen. So let's talk about equity. Right now, the entire Crenshaw corridor, which at one time was a tree-lined entity called the Scenic Highway. Now what we have is, I'll say, just to be generous, 99% market rate housing occurring with minimals allocated to low, very low, and et cetera. So what we would propose is that this CPIO would present affordable housing based on the income of the existing community, which is about at least one half lower than the county. So it is totally just a continuing denigration of this community. We have a light rail traveling at grade level from Vernon all the way up to 79th Street on Crenshaw Boulevard. This train is not coming to us. This train is coming through us. And once again, now we have a Slauson corridor being proposed to open up opportunities for market rate housing. Hi. Let's just say the truth.
Thank you.
It's not market.
Thank you. Cecilia, do we have any neighborhood council resolutions or community impact statements?
Cecilia Lamas, for the record, we do not, and I was not notified that council office would be participating.
Okay, so we have no representatives from Council District 8 or 9. If this is incorrect, please go ahead and raise your hand now. Okay, thank you. I will go ahead and close the public testimony portion of this item. Staff, is there anything you'd like to respond to? I think in particular, if you could speak to the more affordable housing in the Crenshaw corridor and how this plan, reiterate how this plan is preserving industrial jobs. And then lastly, there was a question from Gentleman Mario about how we're treating existing businesses that now may be non-conforming with the new land use regulations.
Sure. Stephen Kettigbeck, for the record. With respect to the Hyde Park area, the scope of the TNP is really focused on those parcels that go down the Hyde Park Industrial Corridor, which are currently zoned industrial or commercial manufacturing. And so we are not changing any of that zoning with the idea that we want to preserve the industrial and jobs nature of that of those sites. At the same time, we also know that there is a lot of construction activity, mixed income and affordable housing activity along Crenshaw Boulevard as part of TOC cases. So our rationale included making sure that the Hyde Park Industrial Corridor through the CPIO remained a jobs base while also keeping in mind that a lot of affordable housing and mixed income housing is happening along Crenshaw. In terms of moving on to the next question about how are we keeping the industrial base, as mentioned before, we are not changing the majority of the zoning. The majority of the industrial zoning is going to stay intact. And so existing industrial uses today that are allowed under those industrial zones will continue to occur and continue to be allowed. That said, we do want to, you know, look forward to how industry can shift going forward into the future. And so that that was the rationale for us providing a new incentive for green employment uses. And to And to the last commenter, Mario, I believe your issue about ingress egress from your site, it's I believe LA Metro would be the authority to contact there, and I could send you that contact information for the community relations manager to voice your concerns.
Thank you. So one other question I have is, so for a business like Mario's, which may be non-conforming, he's currently renting that space. So when he leaves that space, will whoever comes in have to conform with the zoning, or is it only once the subject property is redeveloped that that comes into play? How is that use grandfathered? Is it by C of O, or is it until it's redeveloped?
I believe there's a building and safety provision that that allows a business to continue, a new business to move in and continue the existing use if the previous use has been active for a certain amount of time.
So really we're talking about when someone comes in and redevelops a parcel, when these new zones would come into play?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioners, are there any questions or comments? Renee?
Hi. This is Renee Dake Wilson. Is it too loud?
No.
I work in a semi-industrial area. There's a lot of something going on right now. So I think it's really interesting. This is like a case study in planning and how planning works. We, a number of years ago, held some fascinating, instructive hearings in South Los Angeles with the Planning Commission to approve the South and Southeast LA community plans. One of the programs in that plan was to go after grant applications to allow for specific corridor developments. And this is one of the ones that has come through. So now we have Metro dollars specifically funding a Department of City Planning work program that was directed by the council to go after these funds. So planning went after these funds is trying to come up with a plan through the outreach that has gone on for the last 3 years to listen to neighborhood issues, concerns, which are policy-based and also neighbor-based. So it's things like maybe there's been a change in policy. Like I'm going to say, for example, urban oil drilling. Say there was urban oil drilling here, it would affect that directly. But that's not a specific on-the-ground use here, but they're taking some specific broader issues and implementing this in the CPIO, but then they're also going block by block through this 5-mile long corridor to look at the zoning and how to best have it match this major improvement in this area. To have this, so that's how we end up with a CPIO. The next thing that's going to happen that's so illustrative in the planning process is that because of the CPIO, anything that conforms with these uses will not be discretionary approval. So I think that's something where people misunderstand planning a lot, is that people think planning is approving projects just out of their preference. And really what is being done is that planning enacts land use codes. Land use codes are developed by the city council. They are reviewed and approved. We are a decision-making authority for any policy. And then they go through a variety of city council committees. And that is the direction that city planning implements. So in this instance, we are saying this will be the land use in here. And if you're compliant with that, you don't have to see us. We're saying this is a plan. This is how we think this should be. And in my view, this is an incredible, it's like how things are work really well. Obviously, when you have a hearing like this and we have people that feel like they were not contacted or they don't understand how it's going to be used, that's exactly why we have this hearing, is so that we can listen to people that haven't heard what's being implemented and how it affects them, sometimes negatively, and address their issues. So I think that's great. I think this is, you know, an example of how the process should work. I am really interested in how this compares a little bit to the Frogtown queues. I was involved in, my office is in Frogtown now, but before then I was involved in the Frogtown, before my office was here. I was in the instrumental in the Planning Commission's passing of the Frogtown queues, and we maintained a lot of the light industrial uses because of live-work requirements and building heights and story heights. That was a big thing the community came up with as part of the community-centered solution that Commissioner Learn was involved with as well as a private citizen and with her nonprofit. So I wonder how those specific land use issues have come to bear in this CPIO here, if staff can speak to that, can lift those up, because I heard a lot of concerns about job retention and economic engines, especially green jobs.
Yes. Stephen Kettigbeck for the record. In terms of how it compares to the Frogtown queues, specifically maintaining light industrial uses, it's true that there are a lot of industrial land uses on Tsleil-Waututh right now. And as mentioned before, the zoning for those will not change. And so light industrial uses will continue to be allowed per those zones. And in terms of job retention, I would say job retention and job attraction, I would say we also reached out to EWDD and LACI, LA Clean Tech Incubator, just to learn more about the workforce training programs that can help provide pipelines for green jobs. And so although the CPIO doesn't, you know, regulate those sort of workforce programs as much as we can, you know, we wanted to uplift and learn more about those type of pipeline programs that speak to the vision of the TNP.
That particular community member spoke about solar install and wanting to have solar install. My understanding is that the land use allows for companies that may install solar, that there are certainly maybe citywide or area-wide, but certainly statewide programs that allow for buildings to have solar on their roof and incentivize that. But there will be no solar panel manufacturing here, that is too noxious a use to have. Is that correct? Is there anything you want to say about solar?
Yeah.
It was a specific...
Yes. So just to take a step back, for this this term that we're using, green employment use, we're creating a new definition in the CPIO for that. And universally, I'd say there's no unified definition for green employment use. But for the purposes of land use and zoning, we looked at our city's official use list and tried to determine what sort of uses could fit within this broad definition of green employment. And so we did identify a solar use. The official term is solar energy system structures. So that use would fall under the definition of green employment use. So that would be incentivized.
Okay. Okay, so I hope that some of those questions are answered. I'm interested in two questions about the path frontage. One is about vegetation and what requirements are. I know there's the Rio around the LA River, which has significantly the impact about that is the vegetation requirements for those surrounding buildings because of water infiltration issues. So that's a little different, but it also has constraints about the low water use and other vegetation there. What are the vegetation requirements for these buildings that are similar?
You can connect back for the record. So just to provide some more context, we are requiring a 10-foot setback from the bike path for private property on the path facing frontage. And what the CPIO would require is that if sites are providing parking facing the rear, that they be accompanied by a landscape buffer to screen that parking. And so generally I'd say we want to screen parking, use vegetation to screen parking, but at the same time, you know, allow the developer to program that 10-foot setback area with all kinds of amenities, whether it's landscaping, whether it's bike path amenities, whether it's outdoor patio, outdoor dining, space that we feel could help activate the corridor.
I think it's notable that this planning is planning for people. The people who are going to use that bike path are visitors to the area, they're residents and workers in that area. And this is an incredible amenity to have a frontage that might be that 10-foot buffer that's being legislated, or 20-foot buffer in some areas, is an incredible opportunity for the workers and the people that are using or fronting this new recreation opportunity in the neighborhood. And I'm glad that there are some screening from some of the less, you know, who wants to look at a parking lot? So I'm glad that there's some screening requirements for that. Certainly all other requirements like finger islands and shading of cars will be required as normal. My last question is about, there was some comments that we received about bike access and Metro requiring a fence between the bike path and the properties, yet the plan is asking specifically for that great frontage that you showed, Spoke Cafe and La Colombe and their entries and frontages. Can you speak to the conflict that's there, why the Metro is requiring a fence separation, and why planning is asking for the gate, and then how they mesh?
Yes, Stephen Kennegrad for the record. So when we first started this work program, we did not want there to be a fence at all, similar to how the LA River bike path is through Frogtown. But, you know, as we met with Metro, we realized that Metro had committed to putting in a fence to delineate the bike path from private property. And this is Metro's rationale is for security reasons, for liability reasons, and so forth. So knowing that, you know, we had to find a way to come up with provisions to help encourage access. And so the first thing we did was, you know, after meeting with Metro, we came up with a process in which applicants should meet early on with Metro to discuss the feasibility of modifying Metro's fence to provide that path access to private property. And that would happen on a case-by-case basis. And luckily, there's recent precedent for this with a case at 3401 La Cienega near the Expo line, in which a developer worked with Metro to come up with an agreement to provide path access from the Expo bike path. And so now that precedent's in place, we in Metro feel that that precedent can carry over to Slauson for future projects. Secondly, I wanted to mention that knowing that Metro was going to put the fence in, we worked with our department's mobility team and LADOT to put path access to a bike path as an eligible strategy as part of the pending TDM ordinance update. So developers, you know, would be incentivized to provide path access and satisfy their TDM requirements by coordinating with Metro.
I think it's really important to streamline that process to make it a really easy process to get approval from Metro and to have it a standardized method. Is there a way that you see to add that to this? That would be the one modification I would ask for, is standardizing that connection. The whole reason to have a bike path is so people can get to it, and the whole reason to have this 10-foot setback is so that people can have that frontage and connection. Certainly, yeah, all of the, you say that the Frogtown bike path is not fenced, but certainly it is all fenced. Everybody who fronts that property has put up a fence. And I'd like that Metro is paying for that fence instead of the homeowners or business owners, excuse me, instead of the business owners along there. But I think I would ask that there be a modification in our approvals that would call for a standardized system for how to easily review and provide access from a private property to the bike path, a gate, for pedestrian and bike use, not for car use, because that seems like that's sort of the whole point, is to have this frontage and connection and access. Certainly the security issues being solved by Metro's concern and some of the financial hardship. But if they want to put in a fence, I want to make it, or if they want to put in a gate, I want them to have that access to the business, especially. Thank you. I'm hugely supportive.
Thank you. Yvette?
I'm using a whole other piece of technology today, so my arm has to reach a little further. And Commissioner Lopez Ledesma, thank you. Thank you, President Millman. And yes, always bringing up excellent points, Commissioner Dave Quilson. I also want to express my support for the project. I know it's also been a challenging couple of years in terms of just doing outreach for projects because of the pandemic, right? And so I hear also the concerns coming from community members about the project. And I'm glad we were able to sort of distill some of the information around it so folks have a better understanding of what it is and how it will impact the community. But I would also ask that, yes, this, but one, I would support the modification that Commissioner Dave Wilson was speaking about. But also just ask that should this project move forward today, that, you know, outreach just really doesn't stop. And it's great to see that the collaboration with Metro, I mean, you know, I know it can be challenging to sort of work across agencies, jurisdictions, et cetera, but I think this is a good example of how we can better do that. So I appreciate all your work on this and staff's presentation and great presentation. And thank you, Stephen, for answering some of those questions just now. That's all.
Thank you. So it sounds like we are gaining support for the project with the Dake Wilson Amendment. Is there anyone else who would like to speak or make a motion?
This is Commissioner Lehr. I want to also reinforce the Dake Wilson Amendment and to thank the planning team for kind of going through a process during a difficult time and to be where we are right now with just a handful of comments that we're able to clarify is really exciting. I also wanted to note, it's unfortunate that Commissioner Perlman isn't here. I was struck by the element of making any extra parking be electric ready. Hope that ends up being something that's more consistent beyond just this policy so that Commissioner Perlman doesn't have to raise it every single time. But I support this and look forward to it being in place so that there is a framework for all of these improvements and investments.
Thank you. Any other comments or a motion? If there are no other comments, Renee, do you want to move the item with your amendment?
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion to wholeheartedly approve this this locations to these areas as suggested by staff, per staff recommendation, with the modification of making gates more easily, readily feasible through an approvals, a standardized approvals process.
Thank you. And Renee, does that also include the technical modification?
Of course it does include the technical modifications.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
Commissioner Lopez-Ledesma, I'll second.
Great. Thank you. Cecilia, we have a motion and a second. Will you please call for the vote?
Cecilia Lamas, for the record. Commissioner Dake Wilson.
Yes.
Commissioner Lopez-Ledesma.
Yes.
Commissioner Lehrn.
Yes.
Commissioner Mack.
Yes.
Commission Vice President Cho.
Yes.
Commission President Millman.
Yes.
And the motion carries.
Thank you. Before we move to the next item, I unfortunately am going to have to leave the meeting. I have an obligation for my daughter, but I am going to leave, and the commission will be in the very capable hands of Vice President Cho, who will move us on to the next item. I hope everyone has an okay week, and we'll see you shortly. Thank you for your time.